Okay, let's jump right into understanding something that, well, it seems simple on the surface, but it gets complex fast. How materials actually build up layer by layer.
Right, like when you're growing thin films for electronics or coatings for optics, it's all about particles arriving and sticking down.
Exactly. And today we're doing a deep dive into a really classic model for this called ballistic deposition.
And we're basing this on a foundational paper, Ballistic Deposition on Surfaces by Meakin, Ramanlal, Sander, and Ball. It's key because it really digs into the basic rules, you know, how particles stick, what shapes emerge.
Yeah, so our mission here is to unpack that paper for you, sort of turn it into an audio overview.
Yeah.
We want to get the core physics, look at the surprises, and really get a handle on how these simple rules can lead to some, well, pretty intricate structures, sometimes puzzling ones.
And it really starts with that practical side, vapor deposition, for example. You've got particles hitting a surface, how they travel, how they stick, that determines everything about the final material. And this ballistic model, it captures a very specific, like super simple scenario. Imagine tiny particles, like bullets, flying in perfectly straight lines,
Ballistic.
and they stick instantly, permanently. The very first thing they touch, either the base surface or another particle that's already landed.
That core idea is just so elegant. Straight path, instant stick. But it didn't actually start with growing films on surfaces, did it?
No, that's right. It was first used for something else entirely, looking at how tiny particles clump together in liquids. Colloidal aggregation, think Voigt's and Sutherland's work.
Right.
But then, as vapor deposition and similar techniques became more critical for technology, people realized, hey, this simple point-shoot-stick model could be a really good starting point for understanding surface growth, too.
And the paper makes a point of contrasting it with other simple growth models out there.
Yeah, like the Eden model, where things just kind of stick randomly anywhere on the edge of a growing cluster.
Or diffusion-limited aggregation, DLA, where particles wander around randomly before finding a place to stick.
Yeah.
Exactly. Ballistic deposition stands out because of that straight line trajectory. The particle knows exactly where it's going until it hits something.
Okay, so particles hitting straight, but what happens when they come in at an angle? That's where things get interesting,
Oh,
right?
yeah. That's one of the first things people noticed, both in real experiments and early simulations. If the particles are coming in at a steep angle, the deposit doesn't grow straight up. It tends to form these leaning columns.
And that observation led to something called the tangent rule. Sounds mathematical.
It is, but it started as just an empirical observation, something people saw happening. They noticed a relationship between the angle the columns lean at, let's call that beta, and the angle the particles come in at, which is alpha.
And the rule was.
Tan beta equals about half of tan alpha. Tan beta equals about half of tan delta. Tan beta equals 0.5 tan alpha.
So a simple geometric relationship.
Seemed like it. People saw in studies of aluminum films, rare earth metal films. It looked pretty reliable for describing this tilted growth. It got pretty widely accepted.
Okay, but here's where the paper drops a bit of a bombshell, at least for me reading it. Despite how well it seemed to work in practice, their simulations showed that within this basic ballistic model, the tangent rule is not actually correct, not quantitatively.
Yes, that's a really key finding. The simple model doesn't obey that simple rule, especially when the incoming angle, alpha, gets really steep.
So, like, way off.
Pretty significantly off at high angles. For instance, if particles come in at 80 degrees, the simulation results deviate strongly from what the tangent rule predicts.
So what did the simulation suggest instead?
Well, for those large angles, they propose a different empirical relationship based on their data. Beta seems to be closer to alpha minus about 16 degrees.
Alpha minus 16 degrees. Any significance to the 16?
It's interesting, yeah. That 16 degrees is roughly the kind of fan angle you'd expect if you were just depositing particles onto a single isolated particle sitting on the surface, sort of a shadowing effect limit.
And what about smaller angles?
They mentioned it's actually kind of hard to even define a clear column direction, beta, when alpha is small. The growth looks more jumbled.
Okay, so the big conclusion on the tangent rule is.
It's that while it might be a handy rule of thumb in real life, this foundational ballistic model shows it's not some fundamental truth of the process itself. If it works well in real systems, there might be other physics going on, things beyond just simple ballistic sticking.
That's a really important distinction. What feels like a law might just be an approximation that works sometimes. Okay, so digging deeper required more extensive simulations, right? and that often means using lattices.
Exactly. To study how things behave over really long times or large areas, simulating every particle in continuous space gets incredibly computationally expensive. So researchers often simplify by putting everything on a grid.
Like a checkerboard in 2D or a grid of cubes in 3D.
Precisely. Particles still come down, usually straight down in these lattice models, but they only stick at predefined sites, typically right next to an already filled site at the highest point in that column. It speeds things up massively.
But you still capture the core idea of particles arriving and sticking sequentially.
Right. And the focus shifts slightly. With lattice models, people really zero in on the evolving surface of the deposit. This boundary region is often called the active zone.
Because that's where the new particle is going to land and stick.
Exactly. That's where all the growth happens. And the key question becomes, how rough is this surface? How does its width, or roughness, usually called ishi, change as the deposit gets thicker and wider?
And there's a standard way to describe that roughness scaling.
Yes, the family and Vixek scaling hypothesis. It's a powerful idea. It basically says the roughness, ishi, depends on the width of the surface, usla, raised to some power alpha la, but it's also affected by how tall the deposit is relative to the width.
Okay, that sounds a bit abstract. What does it mean in practice? Isa flat.
Think of it like this. There are usually two stages. When the deposit is still very thin compared to how wide the surface is, so H is small compared to low, the roughness actually grows with the height. It follows a power law. H is proportional to H raised to another exponent, nu.
So it gets rougher as it gets taller initially.
Right. But then once the deposit gets really tall, H is much larger than low. Something changes. The roughness stops depending on the height and reaches a steady state. It just depends on the overall width of the surface, L, and that's where the alpha exponent dominates. A becomes proportional to low.
I see. So nu describes the initial growth of roughness with height, and alpha describes the final saturated roughness related to the system size.
Exactly. And these exponents, alpha and nu and gamma, which relates height and width scales, where aki, they're like the fingerprints of the growth process. They tell you the fundamental way the roughness develops.
Got it. So what fingerprints did this paper find in their 2D lattice simulations?
Okay, for the standard 2D model, just nearest neighbor sticking, NN, their simulations gave effective nu values around 0.30 to 0.33.
And why is that range significant?
Well, it matches up really well with previous results for ballistic deposition, but also, interestingly, with the Eden model we mentioned earlier.
Suggesting they might be related somehow, even though the rules are different.
Precisely. It hints they might belong to the same universality class. This is a huge concept in physics. Different microscopic rules leading to the same large-scale statistical behavior, same exponents.
Wow. Okay, and what about alpha, the width exponent?
Their alpha values were around 0.47. This was closer to the theoretical prediction of 0.5, exactly one half, than some earlier simulations had found, which were more like 0.42.
So getting closer to maybe a simple fraction.
Seems like it. They do caution that you have to be careful about corrections to scaling effects that disappear only at truly infinite sizes, but yeah, points towards alpha being 12.
Did they try changing the sticking rules slightly, like allowing sticking to next nearest neighbors, NNN?
They did. And interestingly, even though that NNN model creates a deposit that's much less dense, more porous, the scaling exponents they found were very similar to the standard NN model.
Reinforcing that universality idea again.
Exactly. The fine details of the sticking might not matter for the large-scale roughness exponents.
Okay, and then they looked at an even simpler model, the single-step 2D model. What was special about that one?
Yeah, this one has rules that basically prevent large overhangs or deep valleys from forming too easily. Steps between columns are limited. And here, the results got really clean. The density is exactly one, no pores.
And the exponents.
They found nu was incredibly close to 0.332, which looks a lot like 13, and alpha was around 0.5029, which is almost exactly 12.
Wow. Okay, so that strongly suggests the true ultimate scaling exponents for 2D ballistic deposition are likely nu and 113 and alpha Gould's 12.
That's the implication, yes.
Yeah.
And if E's in back awe, that would mean gamma is 1.5. Really neat, simple fractions potentially governing this complex growth.
So besides the overall roughness, did they look at the surface structure itself, like the actual bumps and steps?
They did, and found something else really important. They measured the total length of the interface line. Imagine tracing along the top surface, up and down every step.
Okay, sort of the total wiggliness.
Kind of, yeah. And what they found, and even proved mathematically in an appendix, is that this total interface length doesn't just keep increasing forever as the deposit gets taller. It actually reaches a limit, a finite value that's just proportional to the overall width of the surface.
So the surface gets rough, but the total amount of up and down edge settles down relative to the width. It doesn't become infinitely jagged everywhere.
Exactly. Which connects to another finding. They looked at the distribution of step heights between adjacent columns. How likely is a small step versus a big jump? They found it follows an exponential decay. N delta h is like a times e to the minus k times delta h in simple terms. Big steps are exponentially rare. You get tons of small steps. But the probability of seeing a really large height difference between neighbors drops off very quickly.
Okay, let's connect those two things. The total interface length saturates and large steps are exponentially unlikely. What does that tell us about the surface's geometry? Is it like a fractal coastline?
It tells us it's not like a standard fractal coastline, which is often self-similar, meaning it looks statistically the same if you zoom in. This surface is self-affine.
Self-affine. What's the difference?
It means the scaling is different in the horizontal direction compared to the vertical direction. It's rough, yes, but how rough it looks depends on the scale you're looking at it, and specifically how you scale the height versus the width. The limited step sizes and saturating interface length are characteristic of this self-affine structure. It's not uniformly rugged at all scales in the same way.
Got it. Different scaling horizontally and vertically. Okay, that's 2D sorted, seemingly quite well understood with potential exact exponents. Now, what about the jump to 3D, which is, you know, arguably much more relevant for actual devices?
Right. And this is where things get less clear. For the standard 3D nearest neighbor model, their simulations suggested exponents around alpha 14 and f 14.
Okay, different from 2D. What about the 3D single step model?
There, they found alpha was closer to 0.363 and nu seemed to be around 22 to 0.23.
So not even consistent between the different 3D models. And the paper mentions that getting to the true large-scale limit is much tougher in 3D, right?
Absolutely. 3D simulations are vastly more computationally demanding. You need enormous systems run for very long times to be sure you're seeing the true asymptotic behavior, and it's harder to be confident you've reached it compared to 2D.
And this difficulty, this uncertainty in the simulations, is compounded by issues with the theory, isn't it? This is where they flag that very puzzling situation.
Exactly. They also looked at analytic approaches trying to solve the model with mathematics, not just simulations.
And what did that yield?
Well, remember, for the 2D single-step model, they could map it to a known statistical physics model, which analytically confirmed alpha equal 12. Perfect agreement with their simulations.
Great. So does that work in 3D?
Not quite. They could map the 3D single-step model to another statistical model called a six-vertex model. But when they performed their own analytic calculation based on that mapping, the result they got for the scaling exponent alpha was zero.
Zero. Wait. The simulation suggested alpha was maybe 14 or 13, and their theory says zero. How does alpha zero even work?
An alpha zero means the interface width doesn't grow like a power of the system size anymore. Instead, it suggests the roughness grows only logarithmically with size, which is much, much slower growth. It's a fundamentally different kind of scaling behavior.
So a major clash. Simulations suggesting roughly 14 to 13, their own analytic results suggesting zero. That is a puzzle.
And it gets worse. They also mention another theoretical prediction from earlier work, which suggests alpha should be exactly 14 in 3D.
Okay, so you've got simulations pointing one way, one theory saying zero, the other theory saying 14, no consensus at all.
None. And the difference between logarithmic growth, alpha zero, and power law growth, alpha 14 or 13, is significant. It really highlights a gap in understanding the fundamental nature of this seemingly simple growth process in three dimensions.
That's fascinatingly frustrating. Okay, let's try to wrap this up. We've gone through the basics, the tangent rules limits, the scaling in 2D, and this 3D puzzle. What are the key takeaways for you listening to this deep dive?
I think first, it shows how even really simple microscopic rules, particles fly straight, stick instantly, can generate surprisingly complex large-scale structures and behaviors. It's a great example of emergence.
Second, that tangent rule. It's a good reminder that empirical rules that work well in practice might not capture the fundamental physics of the simplest underlying model. It's useful, but maybe not universal.
Third, in two dimensions, things seem remarkably well-behaved. Ballistic deposition appears to fall into a universality class, likely with exact simple scaling exponents like alpha 12 and nu 13. And the resulting surface isn't just randomly rough, it has this specific self-affine fractal character.
Uh-huh. Limited step sizes, saturating interface length.
Right. But then the fourth and maybe most crucial point from this paper is the big question mark over 3D. The very dimension most relevant to making real stuff, like thin films, showed these fundamental disagreements between simulations and different theories about how the surface roughness scales. It was, as they said, very puzzling.
And understanding this stuff matters, right? Controlling how films grow is critical for performance in electronics, optics, you name it. Yeah. Knowing how roughness develops, why columns might form, it's practically important.
Absolutely. This paper lays groundwork for understanding that, but also clearly flags where the basic science was still unresolved, particularly in 3D.
Which leaves us with a really interesting final thought to ponder. Why? Why does the 2D version of this simple ballistic sticking process seem to settle into such clean, possibly exact scaling laws, where theory and simulation can agree, but just adding that third dimension throws everything into disarray? What fundamental complexity, what different physics, kicks in just by going from a flat plane to full 3D space that makes the outcome so much harder to predict and understand?